In just a moment, we're going to partake of the Lord's Supper, in which we remember the death of Jesus. And I had a lesson prepared for this. I was working on it through yesterday. I was getting ready to put it into PowerPoint. I had a lesson that I was going to do. And my heart was pricked, and I chose to change it to prepare our minds a different way. We're thankful for everybody here. Some of the visitors may not be aware of the circumstance, but one of our families isn't here this morning. They're a block that way at the hospital, watching over their young son, who's, they've been told, has meningitis. And not everybody knows what meningitis is. They didn't. They didn't really understand it. And they were telling me about how a doctor came in and really scared them. Really scared them. And I'm not saying whether that doctor was appropriate in doing this or not, but I want you to understand the moment they had, when they had going through their mind, not we're going to lose a child, but this doctor has scared them to realize we're going to lose them all. We're going to lose all of our kids. I can't even fathom what that's like. But it got me to thinking, what if at that moment Jesus had walked into the hospital? He'd walked into their room, and the doctor is giving them this fearful circumstance. And Jesus just touches Harrison and says, he's all better. He's healed. Because that's who Jesus is. That's what Jesus could do. That's what Jesus did. And then it is beyond my comprehension to think that if Jesus had done that to one family or even multiple families, that anybody would then cry out, I want that Jesus to suffer. I want nails through his hands and his feet. I want him impaled to a cross. I want to see him die. I want to watch. But that's what happened. Jesus had just before that, resurrected Lazarus from the dead. He had taken a broken family and fixed it. Less than a week before they're crying out for his death, in Matthew 21, right after Jesus kicks people out of the temple, it says there were lame people and there were blind people, and he healed them. Jesus himself said, you guys are going to say to me, physician, heal yourself. They're calling him the great physician. And now they're asking for him to die. I'm befuddled. The concept of us remembering his death, that people would think that about him. It is beyond my comprehension to think about this great injustice, that the one who heals is the one they're asking. We want him dead. We want him to suffer. And we want to watch. But I think about the Eddies. And not just the Eddies, I think about so many of you. I know that many of you have it as your goal, your intention, that you will protect your family. I know that many of you are heavily involved with owning guns, and it's not just because it's a lot of fun to shoot, but it's because you don't want to rely on others to protect your family. But we all come to a point sometimes, no matter how many guns we have, no matter how much power we try to hold, there comes a moment when we can't do anything. When we really get to this point and we realize we are nothing. I imagine that's how Mike and Courtney feel. Because there's no, what can they do? We get to this point where the only thing we can do is weakly, with all of our heart, but just in humility and weakness, turn to God and say, help. Please, please help. And then wonder if he hears. Oh, he hears. He hears. This is our reminder. that Jesus hears. Because he's taken our greatest concern, our greatest disease, and it is not meningitis or cancer or anything else that can only kill the body. It is sin, which destroys the soul, and it's not something that's at risk. It is 100% consistent. Sin always destroys the soul. And God has seen our need. He has heard our pleas. And he sent his son to die on the cross. He answered our concerns. And so in 1 Peter 2 and verse 24, it makes mention of what Jesus has accomplished for us. At the very end of that verse, it just says, "For by his wounds you were healed." Does he hear? Absolutely he hears. He hears our prayers. He's concerned about our needs. He answers our prayers. We partake of the Lord's Supper and we're remembering this is the God who hears and the God who answers. And we think, but will you help me with this? Whatever this may be, it's always big to us. It's always consuming our heart and our mind. And sometimes we think maybe it's too much. Maybe God won't answer this prayer. But the Lord's Supper is a remembrance that Jesus, the Son of God, hung on the flesh, on the cross. It's a reminder that there is absolutely nothing God won't do for you. And he won't do for me. In Romans, well, you know John 3:16, right? "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son." Romans chapter 8 and verse 32, this whole passage hinges on this concept that he sent us his Son. You see, in verse 31, it says, "What then shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who is against us?" How do we know God's for us? How do we know he's on our side? Well, what does he say? "He who did not spare his own son, but delivered him over for us all, how will he not also with him freely give us all things?" We're remembering that God gave us his son. There's nothing he won't do for you. There was no sacrifice too big for God to make for our sins, for our needs. And so we partake of the Lord's Supper remembering not a fact, not some factual event that Jesus died on the cross and was resurrected, but an impactful event, an emotional event, something that means everything to us. Yes, it shows us the injustice of it, but it shows us that he loves us, that he hears us, and he will take care of us. I wish that I could just say that you won't suffer, your family will always be fine, but that's not the case. But here's what it does mean. When it tells us that God did not spare his only son for our sake, what it does mean is that whatever you do face and whatever you do endure, in the end, it will be okay. Because that's what he's saying in verse 28, previously in Romans 8, verse 28. "We know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose." The statement there isn't everything you experience is good, but everything will come to good. So I know in the end, it will all be good. And you know why I know? Because of this. Because he offered his son. He goes on and he says, "We're not going to be conquered by anything." Verse 35, "Who will separate us from the love of Christ? Will tribulation or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or peril or sword? Just as is written, 'For your sake we are being put to death all day long. We were considered as sheep to be slaughtered.' But in all these things, we overwhelmingly conquer through him who loved us." I don't know what all we're going to have to face or what all we're going to have to deal with, but because of this, I know we'll win. I know in the end it'll work out. I know in the end we are victorious if we love God and if we serve him. And so he asks us to come together and to remember him and to partake of the Lord's Supper. And we do it every week. And this is our reminder. But it's something more. This is an opportunity for us to partake in a manner that shows God we appreciate the physician. We appreciate the son and the sacrifice. And so let us partake like a person who needs God. Because you do. Sometimes we forget. Sometimes we don't feel it as powerfully as others, but let's partake like we need him, because we do. And let us partake like a person who remembers everything he has done for us, because he did. Let us remember the Lord and his sacrifice. The bread represents the body of Jesus nailed to a cross. The fruit of the vine represents the blood of the covenant shed for many for the forgiveness of our sins.